You're listening to the CLE Foodcast with Lisa Sands, the place for delicious conversation on local food and the people who grow, cook, and share it. Here's Lisa.
Hi, everyone. Today, my guests are Alan Block and Chris Zelski, owners of Flannel Dog Farm in Ashtabula County. Now, you may be thinking, wait a minute, wasn't Lisa's last episode also about Ashtabula County? Well, you would be right. However, it was quite coincidental that my scheduled overnight at Flannel Dog Farm would occur just after releasing my Ashtabula Travel and Tourism episode that I created with support from the Ashtabula County Convention and Visitors Bureau. That said, I really do like Ashtabula County, and this episode is really different. It talks more about creating an intentional lifestyle change, making space for quiet time, growing and running a farm, and the idea of modern homesteading through the eyes of a husband and wife team who have created this beautiful oasis on their property. I stayed overnight in their tiny house, enjoyed a roaring fire and an all-local breakfast made by Alan before interviewing the couple. It was heaven. This episode is presented with support from Chef Douglas Katz and the Katz Group of Restaurants. I was just at Amba again, and I was reminded of how much I really do love it. The warming flavors are really something else, and as this cold air moves in and nightfall arrives earlier, you really should grab a few friends and go. Trust me on this. And to keep up with everything Doug's doing, head to chefdouglaskatz.com. Doug and I would like to remind you that the holiday season is approaching, and shopping local is the only way to go. Yep, I went there. I said holiday. Skip the tempting Amazon Prime Day triggers and teases and make a gift list that bolsters the Northeast Ohio maker economy. I'm gearing up for my annual holiday episode, which will feature my picks for local gift items, places to eat, foods to buy, make, and share with others. Follow me on Instagram and Facebook for more on this annual episode and send me a direct message if you have an idea for a gift I should feature. Speaking of makers, my conversation with Alan and Chris of Flannel Dog is all about growing, raising, making, and sharing beautiful things like locally grown foods, inspirational works of art, and finding peace, rest, and enjoyment in caring for the environment and each other. We can learn a lot from these modern homesteaders, and even if you never plan to have a beehive or water glass fresh chicken eggs, I think you'll be interested in their approach to simple, authentic living. Alan, Chris, it was so nice to experience Flannel Dog Farm the way you both get to see it every day. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks so much for being here.
Yeah, we're excited to have you here. We've been looking forward to you visiting, and we were so jazzed when we listened to your local foods podcast out here in Ashtabula County. So we're so happy to have you.
You know, that was just the last episode, and I think I recorded that only like 2 weeks ago, but it feels like last month already.
You've been busy.
I have been busy, and also it was like 80 degrees that day.
And it is not today. It is flannel weather. It is sweater weather. It's beautiful out. Yeah.
It's perfect. It's perfect. And I wore a flannel for Flannel Dog Farm because I love flannel. I love dogs. I love farms, animals, fresh eggs, Dutch babies. Thank you for my breakfast. It was delicious.
And what she's not telling you right now is that the flannel that she is wearing literally matches our napkins, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
That was an extra bonus, I would have to say. What is this? This is called something, buffalo?
Buffalo plaid.
Buffalo plaid.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. The day that I got it, I bought two men's flannels. I think I probably went on a day like this and thought, I need some flannel. And so now these are about 3 years old, so they're nice and worn, and they feel very appropriate for this visit to Flannel Dog Farm. On your website, you have three words that have always struck me, and they're very, very simple words, but I gather that they're really the basis of your whole ethos: grow, raise, make. Yep. So tell me about those words and how they relate to what you do here.
Yeah, definitely our mantra. And I would say we've added a fourth word as well, share. Mm. But when we were lucky enough to buy this place and be the stewards of this farm, we thought about, you know, what's our mission here? Like, what do we want the farm to be? So we grow food, we raise animals, chickens and bees, especially right now, and we make things. Chris's artwork, we build buildings, we built a yoga platform, Chris makes planners. And then the share piece is, you know, we really want to share this space and our knowledge and experiences.
Yeah, and one of the things that was really striking to us as we started to make the farm our own was that we really wanted to share it with other people. We wanted to create a sense of community here. So that's been a huge part of, especially the last few years. We started to open it up to campers so that they could camp in the back. We built the tiny houses so that people could stay here literally. And this year was the first year that we started hosting retreats so that we had people come and do, this past month, we had a mind and body retreat. So we had people doing yoga and Qigong in my studio. We had people doing mindfulness out on our platform. And it's just been a wonderful way to meet people and also to really share some of the things that we're super passionate about, including sustainable food, sustainable treatment of the land and creativity, all those kinds of things.
Yeah, it's really grown into a community. And you communicate so well what you're trying to do, I think, on your social media platforms. Alan, we were talking a little bit about that last night as you were helping me start a fire because my suburban upbringing was really showing through last night. I know
the wood, the wood was damp. It wasn't you.
Okay, good. I thought, I've got this. And then I went through like a half a box of matches and I thought, I do not have this. And I was very embarrassed. But you have created this community here. And it seems like you were saying, you think about share as your fourth pillar. But it seems like you just continually add things that bring dimension to the experience here. Why yoga? Is that a personal interest or the meditation or some of the other things?
Great question. So yeah, Chris and I attempt to be dedicated to doing yoga. it kind of fades in and out for us. But this summer we've been fortunate to have a woman staying with us who's a yoga instructor. She wanted to learn about homesteading and living on a farm. And so she really helped us to get the momentum going to have the mind and body retreat that Chris mentioned earlier. And the other piece of it is so many people who came to the retreats we had, we know through Instagram, like you.
Right.
And we got to meet them in real life, which was, they're just even more wonderful in person than compared to.
I mean, I think social media, there's pros and cons to it. But one of the fun things for me is meeting people that know me through Instagram. And my most fun Instagram story is that I was in a Guardians game. And I was actually doing a little promo up on one of the upper deck levels, and they'd given me some tickets to give away. I'd done an episode about the food at the stadium. And there was this woman here, and she goes, "Would you like me to help you do that?" Because I was trying to do it like a selfie. And I said, "Oh, sure." I said, "Yes, but I'm actually doing video." And I was like, "Oh, I do this podcast thing." And she goes, "Are you CLE Foodcast?" And that was like mind-blowing, and just I will never forget that moment. Well, we're somewhere in Ashtabula County, Saybrook Township.
Saybrook Township, yeah.
But what struck me, because at first when I, when I mapped this, and I've been near here several times, as recently as a couple of weeks ago, it feels very remote, but you're actually really close to the lake. You're not that far from Geneva on the lake. Again, another, 10, 15 minutes from Bridge Street, Ashtabula, right on the harbor.
Yes, correct. We're in Saybrook Township, and our farm is located about a mile south of Lake Erie. We are basically sandwiched between Geneva on the lake to our west and Ashtabula Harbor to our east. We are about 15 minutes from I-90, and we're about an hour east of Cleveland and about 40 minutes west of Erie, PA. So we're in this really great location where we're accessible, but we are also kind of remote, and it's very quiet here. One of the things that was really striking to me when we moved here was that I remember being surrounded by the sounds of nature, and it was very striking that I could hear more nature than I could hear man-made anything, cars or alarms or anything like that.
About the only thing that I heard last night periodically, and actually I would say it adds to the experience, was the train.
Yes. Yes.
I didn't expect that. I just didn't pay attention to it. But trains in my life have always been something.
They're
my grandmother
very calming.
Lived,
they yes,
are.
They're
they
very
are.
Calming.
My grandmother in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, lived literally a stone's throw from train tracks. And my dad and his brother would have these stories about playing, because back then nobody cared about safety. They played on trains. They played on train tracks. And so I've always loved the sound of a passing train. I lived in Hudson for a while. I could hear trains, particularly right when the weather turns crisp, the sound carries differently.
Sure, because the leaves are off the trees.
And I feel like that's just a sort of a harbinger of like what's to come, the changing of the seasons. So I did hear that last night. But the point I guess I wanted to make is this feels very remote, and yet it actually isn't. Just from a being able to jump in a car and drive somewhere, it's quite easy.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And the other thing I would say, Lisa, is we were really struck when we moved here about the absence of certain sounds. So, for example, we never hear car alarms. People, for whatever reason, in Ashtabula County don't honk at one another unless they're saying hello. we really rarely hear sirens. So the sounds of the city, because we both moved out here from the Cleveland area, it's very notable how absent they are.
Mm. I just felt like the second I walked on the property, I drove in. As Chris knows, I was so worried about running over a chicken because they just, they were playing chicken. I guess that's what they were doing. They were just basically like, who is this and why are they coming in? And I parked and I walked around and I got to see the Icelandic sheep, which I definitely want to ask you about while I bring them up, because you got those sheep from down in my neck of the woods.
Yes. Yes, true.
Yeah. Oxbow Orchard. So Kyla and Beth raise sheep and have fruit trees, an amazing flower garden, and a beautiful place down in your way. And we actually met them through Hip Camp way back in 2018. They visited when their sister was camping here, and they had their beautiful dog, Nico. And so we've just stayed connected with them, mainly through Instagram. And so when they said they were selling some of their sheep, we've been talking about getting sheep for a while, so the timing just worked out really well. And we love having that connection to them and their farm. And it's funny you say that, because a number of people who have either seen the sheep on Instagram or who I've visited have said, I know these sheep. I drove by them, or I went running by them, or whatever.
And they are actually some of those sheep. That's what I was thinking. I feel like I've met at least one of those sheep once before.
Yes, absolutely.
Kyla and Beth at Oxbow Orchard have a really great little farm stand. And I actually haven't driven by in a while, but is it a more permanent structure now? Are they, that's what they were doing, right? They were building that.
I think they're in the process of building it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's just a great little place to pop in along Canal Road. They're one of the national park farms. So, and they did sort of become known for those sheep, or Nico. I also know who Nico is, and I've met Nico a couple of times. Well, let's go back and talk about sort of the holistic experience here. You can camp, you're hosting retreats. You have a covered wagon also that people can sleep in, but let's talk about all of the pieces, parts of the farm and the animals and, you know, your holistic vision of what you're building here.
We see ourselves as stewards of this place. So when I say this place, I mean both the land and the farmhouse itself. So the farmhouse is a beautiful brick farmhouse that was built in 1860. And so, you know, we do think about the people who first ventured out here to build the house. How'd they get the bricks here? How'd they pick this spot, etc.? So as we understand it, originally the farm was about 180 acres. We have 7 acres here. When we moved here, one of our intentions was to really repopulate the native plants, trees, flowers, and in their so doing, getting pollinators here and birds and animals. So that's really one of our big missions, is to try to return this space to a more natural environment. And so of the 7 acres, about 5 of them are unmowed. They're dedicated to, you know, getting things back to the way they used to be. So that's a big point of what we try to do here on the farm.
And you've intentionally added certain things to do that.
Yes. So we became a pollinator partnership, I think back in 2014. Mm-hmm. We also, one of the things when you and I were walking around yesterday, Lisa, one of the things that was really striking to me was a lot of the farm was originally an old hayfield. And so most of it was either mowed when we arrived, or it was just kind of like waist high hay. And we have intentionally over the past couple of years tried to, as Alan said, reforest it. And when you look out at the south end of our property, those trees are really only about 5 years old. And it's very striking to me that in the course of 5 years of leaving it alone, we now have trees that are, 8-10 feet tall. Mm-hmm. And it's just continually growing. And it's just gorgeous out there.
The other thing we did a few years back was we had 3 ponds dug on the property because there was no water feature, if you will. And so Chris jokes she's going to write a book one day called Dig a Hole, because just digging that hole and letting it fill in with snow melt and spring rain We have hundreds of frogs, snapping turtles, muskrats, migrating birds, willow trees. They've just shown up. We haven't intentionally done anything.
Yes. Herons. We had green herons who nested in our oak tree last year, which was super exciting. But yes, tons and tons of birds in fall. It's been great.
Now, you can't just, on most pieces of property, just dig a hole in. So tell me a little bit about building a pond.
Sure. So we are very lucky here that the earth is primarily ashtabula clay, which is obviously a little bit more dense. So when you dig a hole, it will literally fill up with water. So it is literally that simple. I don't know that you could do that everywhere. I think it probably depends a little bit on the kind of soil that you have. But here we were able to do that. And it was over the course of just leaving it alone over the winter. That was how fast it filled up. And mm-hmm. that pond is 10, 14 feet deep, I think.
So really? It's about the pond the fire.
Yes. It's probably about a third of an acre big. Mm. So it's fairly large.
Yeah, we're also fortunate that we live in a township. We live in the country. And so, you know, generally, it's not very regulated in terms of what you do on your own property. There's no homeowners associations. You know, I'm sure some of our neighbors who drive by are like, are they ever going to mow their grass? but, you know, we're really intending to try to get things to grow here that aren't a lawn. That adjustment from living in the municipalities that we were living in, which were highly regulated, was also a really nice culture shift for us.
And especially in terms of my studio, because I used to work out of my home when I lived in Cleveland Heights. And I'm not even totally sure that was legal back then, because I don't think you were supposed to do that. But we moved out here. And one of the dreams that I had was I wanted to build a studio out here. So the space that we're sitting in right now, for mm-hmm. the listeners who can't see, this was originally a pavilion. It was a 750 square foot pavilion, so fairly large. And we basically enclosed this, turned it into my studio, did all of the work ourselves. It's got just a beautiful open space, lots of natural light. We added onto it about 4 years ago so that I could have a wood shop in here as well, so we could have running water and a traditional restroom so people who camps could come and, you know, have an actual flushing toilet. But
I was very excited about that.
Yes, I was very excited.
I wasn't expecting that. And I'm going to tell you a little secret. I actually brought a really big jar just in case I was afraid to walk to the bathroom. No. But I wasn't afraid at all.
No, it's wonderful. And, you know, I probably have the only bathroom in the county that has a leaded glass ceiling because I'm kind of quirky like that. No, I absolutely believe in flushing toilets. I do not love camping myself. We host campers. That's great. But yeah, you should have the option to have actual running water.
This was as close to camping as I have actually done, for real. I mean, and I say that with also, because I think the Lisa Sands of maybe 10 years ago, definitely 15 years ago, but 10 years ago even, I don't think I could have done this. It feels, I would have been a little afraid of darkness. I would have been afraid of bugs. I actually got very acquainted with a relatively large black spider this morning that I just moved out because I do that now. And I think that makes me very self-actualized.
Yes.
But I, you know, just even my husband was a little bit like, he checked on me a couple of times through the night and I was like, no, this is really, it's really, really comfortable. And now I'm even more intrigued to camp and go a little bit more bare bones. So I think you've actually started a little spark in me.
All right. All right. We are eager to hear. And I always think it's funny because people who like to camp and be out in nature, it's always very fascinating to me when they like the nature part of nature, but not the bug part of nature, which it's, you kind of get one with the other. If you want the stars, sometimes you have a spider or, you know, a mosquito. And they all feed into the ecosystem.
They do. It's the circle of life, as I like mm-hmm. to say.
Yeah, Lisa, you said an important word I want to go back to, which is safe. So, you know, we hear that a lot, especially from single women who come camp here. Many of them have used that word and said they feel really safe camping here, which really, we feel great about that. You know, we do want them to feel safe here because it's not always that easy in like a public campground. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think I actually would have zero interest in a public campground. I think this is the kind of experience, you know, you're sharing your home, which is, it's a really intimate act. Even when I rent from someone, you know, doing a VRBO or something like that, I think to myself, I mean, some people own them as investments and never set foot in them, but a lot of people own them or rent, you know, rent their property and spend time there or, you know, rent it to their families or whatever. I really admire people that have that ability to do that because of course income is a really important thing, and it's a great thing that it allows people to have, but I don't know if I could do it. And I was talking to Chris as she was touring me around what that was like to have guests here. But I feel like the people that you attract, many of the people, you know, Camille from Wild Glory and M. Keen and her, her yoga groups, you have drawn a really particular kind of person here, I think, for camping.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, a lot of the people we get that camp here come to us through Hip Camp, and we wrote the description of the site very specifically to make people realize, like, we call it Flannel Dog Farm for a reason. We're very casual. It's laid back. It's a little bit gritty.
It's not glamping.
It's not glamping. Yeah. I mean, so yes, we have a flush toilet, but we don't have Wi-Fi in the camping area. Like, we frankly would like you to be disconnected while you're here. Take a little break from the digital world. Mm-hmm. So, I think there are certain types of people who are attracted to the space. And, you know, there's some people, as Chris was saying earlier, they're staying here because they're traveling through, because we're close to I-90, or they're out in this area because, as you talked about in your last podcast, like, it's a very big tourism area. But I mean, I can't think of a single person we've met through camping that we weren't like, hey, I'd have a beer with them.
Let's go back to where we're sitting, I want to stay true to your grow, raise, make, share. And I think we've talked a lot about sharing. This studio, your company, your art is made through Copperleaf Studios.
Correct.
Why don't you describe all of the things that you make?
Sure. So I've been an artist for a long time. I founded my business, Copperleaf Studios, in 2007. And I make artwork out of copper and zinc, and recently added brass into the mix. So my work uses traditional printmaking techniques, but it uses, as much as I can, I use non-toxic techniques, especially living out here. I like to be as green as possible. So it uses those techniques, but basically what I do is, instead of using the metal to print on paper, the metal becomes the artwork itself.
The other thing about Chris and her artwork that I don't think a lot of people know, she has work all over the world. She has huge installations in places in Cleveland and Columbus, skylines of both the cities that are feet in dimensions, not inches. So when people ask me about what she does, I often use the word sorceress, because the things she can do with metal, both from an artistic but also an engineering perspective, are really pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's a real pleasure to sit here and look at what's hanging on the walls. And amazing to me that I'm actually sitting here with all the tools that you use to make it.
Yes, correct. Yes, all the tools. You're in the space right now when it's fairly clean, but I can promise you it doesn't always look like this.
Yeah, twice a year, Lisa, we open Chris's studio in May and November for art shows. And so Chris's work is certainly always featured, but we bring in different artists as well. And, it's a way for people to come out to the farm, experience the space. They definitely always want to meet the chickens. Now they'll want to meet the sheep. But really, the artwork is the feature. And it's been a great way to go back to what you talked about earlier, build community around the farm and Chris's studio.
Yeah. And just to touch on that for a moment, one of the things that was really striking to me when we moved out here was that I realized how spoiled I was when I lived in the Cleveland area, because as an artist in Cleveland, you have so much opportunity. You have so many things that you can go and participate in as an artist. You have so many things you can go as just a viewer. And we don't have the same level of art community out here. We have some wonderful organizations. We have the Ashtabula Art Center. We have Bridge Street Artworks. They're all great. I really felt like something was missing, and I realized that I had the opportunity to create it. So part of what I really want to do is be that hub out here for people who are creative or want to experience creative things. So one of the goals that I have is every year, twice a year during that show, I bring in emerging artists, I bring in established artists, I make sure that I bring people from outside the community so that they can, you know, maintain a presence here. I also teach creative business classes, so people who are trying to do something creative and make a living at it can learn, well, you know, what that is all about. And one of the things that's fairly new this year is that we're also opening our farm up to corporate and nonprofit retreats so that those organizations can come out and have a very holistic experience. I know creativity is not just for artists. It's critical for businesses, for innovation. So we're trying to tap into those kinds of things as well.
Oh, wow. That's interesting.
Yeah, we definitely have talked with, groups that want to get their people together, but bringing them all back into the office is a challenge now that everyone works from home. But when they can say, hey, we're going to go to the farm for a day and do team building or brainstorming or whatever it might be, that's an area we've been leaning more into and are pretty excited about.
Well, and your proximity to Cleveland is a really a no-brainer for that. And
yes.
People coming together to work or not doing that really changes the dynamic of a whole neighborhood or a community. And I think we're all still sort of figuring that out.
We are figuring it out. And one of the things that that I've done when I've done some of these corporate in-services and things like that is explain to people that one of the challenges you have when you're working from home is that you are inherently focusing on technology the entire time. And when you focus on technology, you are literally using the linear part of your brain and not the holistic part of your brain. So if you try to do creative work in that environment, it's really difficult. It's really difficult.
So one of the things that being a mostly food podcast I want to talk about is food. And I know that as part of the experience for campers, you do a local breakfast, and a lot of that is sourced locally, not only from eggs on your farm, bread that you make, Alan, and I want to talk to you about that, but other local makers, which I got to meet and talk to a lot of those folks at Harbor Gardens last week. So this is really interesting. I was like, why am I going back to Ashtabula again? I was like, no, I really want to go back to Ashtabula again.
Ashtabula is amazing. And in terms of those breakfasts, I'm just going to put in a plug for him. He is an amazing breakfast maker. He's gotten so many compliments. People are like, this French toast is remarkable.
Well, I certainly didn't expect you to ask me like, what would I want for breakfast? I didn't even know. I was like, 2 hard boiled eggs and some coffee would be great.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. We did have one person who was like, I assumed you were just going to bring me like a packet of oatmeal and hot water. But I love cooking. We love making people feel really welcome. We love that they typically polish off the food we give them. And so it's eggs from our farm. If they're meat eaters, we use pork from like Purple Brown Farm. Mm-hmm. Sasha's amazing. Local beef through Nicursi Meats, another great place that we are blessed to have out our way. But we can accommodate vegetarian, vegan. I do gluten-free sourdough, which has become really popular. So, we try to meet whatever needs they have.
Mm-hmm. I think you have on this table a sourdough that is literally shaped like a pumpkin with a stem and everything. How did you do that?
Yeah, it's true. I tend to not do cute breads, but people love these pumpkin-shaped sourdough loaves.
Is that a cinnamon stick?
The cinnamon stick is the stem. Yep, for sure. So those typically sell like hotcakes, and I've started doing gluten-free in that same shape as well. So I've been baking sourdough for probably 8 or 9 years. I was just doing it for fun to learn. And then Leah Hartman, who's a yoga instructor out here, reached out to me through Instagram. She's like, how do I buy your bread? And I was like, I didn't know anybody would want to buy my bread. So, fast forward to now, I bake probably 30 loaves a week, give or take. Next year, I'll be baking more. I'm doing some bread now for Darkroom Brewing in Geneva.
Oh, neat.
Next year, a new restaurant's going to, I guess I'll say, reopen out in Conneaut called Grandpa Pazai's Place. They're going to have my bread as well. So,
and it's sold down at Harbor Gardens as well in the harbor, which is great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep. I was getting there.
Sorry.
All good. We're a team.
That was a husband and wife moment.
You know,
was a good one.
Pushing each other's sentences.
We have those.
Well, you also gave me some honey, and you said, and some honey for my bees. So there's bees somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, I keep bees. We've been really amazed at how many, since we planted all these, native plants we talked about earlier, Lisa, the number of native bees are just absolutely fascinating. And along the way, I've learned that the honeybees most of us raise are not native to North America. Mm. So I do have a couple colonies. I harvest the honey. We enjoyed it's raw and it's, all natural, no chemicals used in the hives. So, and that's another mantra we have here. We don't use any chemicals on anything. We try to use mechanical or natural means. So one quick example, when we first moved here, I had a ton of issue with slugs in my garden. So we got ducks because ducks eat slugs, and they cleaned up all the all the slugs. And now I have an invasive plant that I've been battling for years called mugwort. Mm-hmm. And it turns out the Icelandic sheep love mugwort, so they're cleaning it all up for me. So that's been just fascinating too.
So connecting the dots really and finding a natural solution to something. I have slugs too, but in Brecksville, I don't think I could get a pile of ducks. But
a little saucer of PBR works too.
Oh, interesting. I thought I also, what do you use? Some people use, well, this is a chemical, but Dawn, some people say like Dawn dishwashing soap for things like that. But I don't see myself sitting Dawn dishes of dishwasher soap around my yard. But PBR, very natural.
Yeah, for sure.
I also think I saw a pizza oven. So obviously you're making loaves of bread, but there's a pizza oven here. Do you bring that out on select evenings when you've got some groups here or retreats?
Mostly for the retreats at this point. We've done 3 meals for each of the retreats. Make your own sourdough pizza has been a blast for everybody. That stove gets up to, or oven gets up to about 900 degrees. So your pizza cooks in about 90 seconds. And a little backstory on that pizza oven. It was actually the first pizza oven owned by Chef V from Citizen Pie. So his wife used to be my boss. And they wanted it out of their backyard. So they asked me if I wanted it. And I said, absolutely. So, you know, the challenge was to figure out how to move it because it weighs 700 or 800 pounds.
How'd you move it?
Well, it took a little while. we eventually found a company that moves pianos and safes. They eventually got it loaded in their truck. It was in February, I believe. It was pretty amusing to watch them try to get it into the truck. But they got it out here to Ashtabula, and yeah, we do fire it up when we have folks around.
We're getting into, well, we're in fall. We're getting into winter. What's Flannel Dog Farm like in the wintertime? What's going on here?
We are moving a lot of firewood. We heat our home with wood, so there's a great deal of stacking firewood, bringing it into the house, that kind of a thing, keeping everything warm, taking care of the animals. So a lot of that kind of stuff.
Yeah, there's no thermostat in our house. So, you know, we're not Amish, but parts of us are close. Like, as Chris said, we do have flush toilets. We like running water. We also like electricity, but we don't have a television. We don't do streaming. We don't have a furnace. So, you know, moving wood into the house and into Chris's studio, where we also have a wood stove. Like, we know that solar energy that was captured in that tree that's going to heat our home. Like, we know every single piece of wood because Chris stacks it all in the summer. She doesn't like me to help. That's where she gets her farm fitness. And then throughout the winter, we move it into the house and the studio to heat. So that's a big activity. And as Chris said, also keeping the animals warm and fed and watered in the winter is a big part of it, too.
And last night when you and I were talking, I learned something that I guess logically I knew. You were talking about the chickens taking a little break and that eggs are actually a seasonal food. And we do not think about them in that way.
Yeah. Yeah, we don't. Yeah. Like you and I were talking about, you know, like if you have never grown strawberries, you wouldn't know that strawberries have a season because you can always get them at the grocery store, like pick your food product in the U.S. and it's typically available. But chicken eggs are the same way. Chickens lay eggs when the days are long, and when the days start to shorten, like now, they lay fewer and fewer eggs. And, you know, we have about 100 chickens, but on winter solstice, if I get one or two eggs, I'm happy about that. In the middle of summer, I'll get, you know, 4 dozen or so a day. Factory farms will use artificial light to keep the hens laying all year round. We think they deserve a break. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually learning about a really ancient egg preservation technique called water glassing, where you put water and pickling lime in a jar and you put the eggs in there and they'll stay fresh at room temperature for about a year. So that's a way we're going to make sure we have eggs in the winter.
Did I just see that on Instagram? You're testing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I have quite a few homesteader people that I'm friends with on Instagram, and a few of them have had really good success with water glassing. And, you know, Chris and I are educators at heart and learners, lifelong learners for sure. So we're always trying something new, and I'm really studying a lot of fermentation right now, different techniques, fermenting vegetables, sourdoughs fermented. I dove into cheese making earlier this year, so the water glassing eggs just kind of fit into that.
Mm-hmm. And just to go back to what you were talking about regarding the seasonality, I think we see our lives as kind of falling into that sort of seasonal flow, if you will. Outside of my art show in November, we really kind of give ourselves a break and just, you know, settle in and relax for a little while. And that's when we do our idea generation. That's when we make a lot of plans for the year ahead, but that's when we also give ourselves a little time to rest.
One of the things Chris and I are very dedicated to is adequate sleep and adequate rest. So, you know, if we need to sleep for 10 hours, we sleep for 10 hours. You know, we're both blessed to have careers where we really don't need an alarm clock. The roosters do that for us on most days anyway.
6:17 a.m.
There you go. Yeah. So, you know, that's a really important part of our health, though, on the farm is, you know, we work hard physically, we work hard mentally. And so getting adequate rest is just a key part of what we do.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about this word that you've used a couple of times, because I think, I don't know, I feel like this word, the meaning's changing a little bit, or maybe it's just evolving. It's homesteading. Because I don't know you. I mean, I think I met you for the first time a couple weeks ago, like in person. Although I followed your work and yours, Chris, for a while. I knew that you lived a decidedly basic existence here. I don't even know how to describe it. Traditional doesn't feel right. Basic doesn't feel right.
Authentic.
Authentic
is the word I love. Yeah.
Oh, I love that. Now I am surprised that you don't have a furnace in your house. I am a little surprised that you don't have a television and that you don't stream and all of that, because I think you're pretty cool people and I think you're very knowledgeable in all these other ways. But I guess the point I want to make is, there's a lot of knowledge and learning behind what you are doing. And I'd love for you to expound on that a little bit, because I know that you used to live in Cleveland and you used to live in very dense neighborhoods and you had a very different lifestyle at one point. And then you made this leap. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure.
Or a lot, because I have a feeling it's a big story.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think, you know, in addition to being authentic, it's very intentional for us. So every day is intentional. On the farm, some things must be done. There are always chores when you have animals or if you're growing your own food. But we're also intentional about how we approach things day in and day out. And so to me, homesteading is as much as possible living off of your land where you are. And growing our own food, raising our own animals is a part of that. There's a food security component to it. There's a nutrition component to it.
Well, the other thing I think is that that's a huge part of it is that Alan grew up on a farm.
That was going to be my next question.
Yeah, I grew up on a farm north of Chicago, back when it was farms. You know, now Chicago and Milwaukee are basically connected by suburbs. We raised chickens. We had a big garden. You know, I knew where my food was coming from most of the time as a kid. So after I went off to college and then got a job and lived in suburbs and cities along the way, I eventually wanted to get back to a farm life. When Chris and I got married in 2013, and we were looking for a home, I don't think she envisioned living quite as rurally as we are.
She did not, in fact, envision this.
I think she loves it now.
I do love it. I do love it. Here's how it happened. We got married, and after we got married, he said, I want to live on a farm. And I remember going, if I had a traditional job right now, I would say, I can't do that. I've got to go to work. But I was like, I work in my house. I can work anywhere. And so I said, okay. And then I remember saying, I want a studio. You can have your farm and I'll have my studio and I'll go wherever you want to go.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense. I didn't realize you had a farming background, but I thought that maybe somewhere in your life you had spent time or you had watched it closely just because of really, I mean, what it requires to make this place be what it is. It is a lot. I mean, you're up early. There are farm chores. There are things that you were doing. You got home last night and immediately grabbed some buckets and walked over to the Icelandic sheep. So it is a very, very full day. And you guys, to me, have very full lives. And you get out and do things and know what's up and all of that. Like, I can't believe I'm sitting across from homesteaders. Like, you're not wearing bonnets. And
We are not wearing bonnets.
Yeah.
The closest we come is the covered wagon. And I will admit that was a total just impulse buy, but it was too fun to pass up.
Yeah, I mean, I guess... when you think of homesteading, you can maybe have a stereotype in your mind about what a homesteader looks like or is like. And in fact, that's something I would say Chris and I in general have reconnected with living in the country, where in the city, it was easy for us to drive by a house and see someone's political yard sign and make a lot of judgments about those people. But living out here, we've relearned that connecting with people in person, sitting across the table at a diner or talking at the feed store or wherever it might be, people are generally good, but they're also very complex and they're very thoughtful. And so living out here has helped us reconnect with people in our community. And I think just in general, redeveloped tolerance, I guess I would say.
Mm-hmm. No, I thought about that after my visit to Bridge Street a couple weeks ago, only because most of the people that I interviewed for that podcast had a lot of different life experiences and lived, you know, I don't want to say a normal life. They lived in urban settings. They lived in on the coast. They lived in busy, bustling cities. And then they realized that what they really wanted was maybe to come back home, or they wanted something more simple, or they wanted like more control of their life experience, which I think you were talking about that a little bit earlier, living in a township and just, you know, really being able to do what you want and everybody minds their own business.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just to kind of, you know, speak to both of those points, I think one of the things that was really striking to me when we moved out here was that, like Alan said, if you see the rural urban divide and you read it on the news, you have a very specific perception of what people are like out here. And even the people that I know back in the city, like we've learned to just really be intentional about those relationships as well. And just meet everybody where they are. I don't even know where I'm going with that.
I think you were going someplace that honestly, I spend a lot of time thinking about. I think a lot about it. I love people. I love all people. I want to love all people. The way the world is now I'm actually thinking about how you're not, you know, barraged by new, you choose to avoid a lot of that. So I think that's not top of mind for you when you encounter somebody, but like, I think it's very important that we suburbanites like myself and other people don't think that anyone that lives in Ashtabula is right out of like hillbilly elegy.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, I agree with that. So for example, like Chris and I both have master's degrees, and we encounter people all day long who maybe just got through high school or maybe didn't get through high school. Doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. Like they don't need to know about our background, or we don't need to know about their background, and we don't judge them and they don't judge us because we're connecting on a different level. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I'm totally with you on that. You know, we're rolling into 2024. It's a political season. Like there's going to be all sorts of online toxicity. Mm-hmm. And so I guess I would just say Chris and I definitely aren't clueless. Like we know what's going on in the world, but we've also learned how to not get distracted by things that don't really matter.
We stay informed, but I'd like to believe that we don't give our attention away as currency to some purpose that is driven by somebody else.
Mm, I love the way you just expressed that. Well, it is a Saturday in Ashtabula County, and you're getting ready to take your bread to Harbor Gardens and probably some other places. They have a big local food festival tomorrow, which is really exciting. We talked about that. I need to post that up on the, I told Gallo I would post on Instagram today for sure and share that information. But I want to end with, and I'd like to hear both of your thoughts on this. When people come to Flannel Dog Farm and they physically come and they pull into the driveway, what do you hope they find here?
Peace, relaxation, creativity, a breath. I hope they can breathe deeper than they have breathed in the last week or month or year.
Yeah, I'm going to sort of sarcastically answer it first. So part of what I thought of when you asked that question is, what do they expect to find? And so our lovely Amazon drivers and UPS delivery people, they'll often ask, where are all the dogs? Because it's called Flannel Dog Farm. And so they think we're raising dogs or selling dogs. And in fact, the name just goes back to when I brewed beer the first time. Chris made labels for me and named them after my two favorite things, flannel shirts and dogs. So when we moved out here and we needed to name the farm, that's where the name came from. Mm-hmm. But in all seriousness, when people come here, I hope that they feel their shoulders relax when they pull into the farm and they see it is entirely natural surroundings. They see the chickens, as you mentioned earlier. Whenever people are here, I encourage them to look up because there are always birds flying over, there's butterflies migrating, or there's just incredible clouds floating by, and really just getting to that intentionality and really a mindfulness state when they get here. And so typically when people leave the farm, we hear the word restored a lot. We hear the word relaxed a lot. And we hear the word I want to return a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can say firsthand that in the middle of the night, the first time in the middle of the night, I woke up and I thought I should go out and look at the stars. And then I was like, no, I'm going to go back to sleep. But I did naturally wake up a little bit before six today, which is my normal. I never need an alarm, to my husband's chagrin. Mm-hmm. But I walked out and looked up and I couldn't believe the stars, the brightness. I did use an app on my phone, Sky Guide. I love it. And I could identify things and I could see the Big Dipper so clearly. I could see, you know, Cassiopeia. I could see Orion's Belt. I saw three planets. Sirius, the dog star, was so, I had to look it up. Actually, I was like, what is that thing? And I, it was just so, so bright. It was exquisite. And I did, just take a moment, and breathe that cool air and look up and smell and listen. And then I went back to bed in the peace portal in the tiny house. And it was really, really great. Well, if you're listening and this sounds so interesting to you and intriguing, you can absolutely follow Flannel Dog Farm on Instagram. There's a wonderful story being told there through great visuals. If you're interested in anything else we've talked about today, bread, yoga, a peaceful overnight, you can also go to flanneldogfarm.com. And Chris, I want to make sure we get your art website in this as well. Can you share that?
Sure. Copperleaf Studios is my copperleafstudios.com, and Copperleaf Studios is my Instagram handle as well, Facebook. So I'm on all regular platforms.
Alan, Chris, thank you so much for having me. I cannot wait to, sometimes I record a podcast and the editing is, it can be kind of daunting. And I think, oh, I don't know. It's going to be a rough one to edit. I actually can't wait to go back and listen to this, and hear the story told to me again and bring it to my listeners. So thanks for letting me be here at Flannel Dog Farm.
Thank you, Lisa.
Yeah, thank you. So much fun.
This podcast is a project of Fork in the Road Productions, and my sound engineer is Bill Connors. I want to share something personal. As I woke up after a peaceful and reflective night at Flannel Dog Farm on Saturday morning, I awoke to some very terrible international news. We all did. And that news has some really deep reverberations here in Cleveland. I want to ask everyone who listens to be kind. Check on your friends and neighbors. Give support to your Jewish friends who may be impacted by the dramatic and tragic events. And do your part to always, always set a bigger table. After all, around a table is where we find fellowship and understanding.